Blog Talk Radio.
It is always sunny in the city of Toronto. It's a little cloudy today, actually. But you know what? It's a beautiful day because I'm done school. Great, man. Oh, and we're also doing episode 42 of the Hockey Guys podcast with Hunter Crowther and Chris Shannon. Chris, I'm done school, man. I'm done. It's the greatest feeling ever. I'm done for 4 months. How are you feeling today, man?
I'm feeling good, and you should be feeling amazing. I mean, that must be a great feeling. I love the song choice of today, for sure. That's probably your best so far.
It really is, like, I don't know if you're a big Always Sunny fan, but
the way my parents
always talked about Seinfeld, I feel like that's going to be Always Sunny for me when I'm older. It'll be that show that's kind of, it's about four self-obsessed friends, and all they do is screw each other over, and deep down they're not actually good people. But the shenanigans they get into are pretty hilarious, and I'm going to watch every single time. Like, I know we're talking about Sunny in Philadelphia, and we're not talking about today's episode with our special guest, Maddie Pfeiffer. Maddie does a lot of analytic work inside the game of hockey. He's worked with the Auto 67s, San Jose Sharks. We could go on and on, but he will be coming on the next few minutes. We're going to talk a little bit about playoff hockey. He'll give his thoughts in the first round as well as his predictions for round two, which gets started tonight as the Washington Capitals, after a tremendous game seven against the New York Islanders, now they travel a little bit further deep into New York and take on the Rangers. 7:30, it's going to be a big one. And then we got the lovable Calgary Flames. They're going to take on the Anaheim Ducks. Ducks coming off and a relatively easy sweep against the Winnipeg Jets. Flames, you know what? They pretty much have the perfect opponent for round one. They handled the Vancouver Canucks, and now they face the Anaheim Ducks. That's Always Sunny. Chris, I can't think of an episode of that show I don't like. Is there an episode you can think of right now that, you know, maybe you didn't get as much of a laugh out of?
Well, when I watched it, U.S. Netflix, I know Canadian Netflix isn't as great as U.S. Netflix, but I watched it off U.S. Netflix, so I did what we all call nowadays, when you watch them all a lot, I forgot what the word is.
I believe it's binging. I believe binging is the word you're looking for.
So I binged Always Sunny, and I think in the middle of it, I watched it too much. Like, the first couple seasons, like, I watched it in a gross amount of time because it was so funny, and I just finished The Office, and I wanted to find a show like The Office. And it was pretty similar to it, and I liked it even more. And so then in the middle of it, I mean, it's been going on for so long, I kind of got a little bored, so I took a little break, and then I came right back to it. But no, I can't either. I mean, every show, you always laugh, and it's just the craziest thing. It's like, how do these guys the creators of the show create these episodes? It's for sure one of my most favorite shows to watch, and it always gets me a little crack up.
That's what I like about the show, too, is that I forget who it was. It was the one thing I like is how everyone on the show also created the show and writes the show and directs the show.
All
Matt, Dennis, Charlie. Not Dee, though. It's hilarious. Dee's the useless girl on the show, and she also doesn't do any of the writing off the show. But
that's a good point.
What I like about the show is just their ability to have such unlikable characters. I mean, like, I think the show's funniest when they're just in public with other people, and they're just doing these ridiculous situations that maybe in the TV universe makes sense, but then when they're just in everyday Philadelphia, these people are like, who are these freaks? Who are these four losers? And I don't know. We've talked about Always Sunny for about 5 minutes as we wait for Maddie Pfeiffer to come on the show, but man, I just love that show. It really is, like, it is our generation's Seinfeld. As much as it's not as subtle as Seinfeld, but man, it's just as funny for us.
I agree very much with that.
I'm glad that we could agree. And now we can agree that we can talk a little bit of hockey. You know what? Let's talk about the games tonight. We'll start off with the Capitals and the Rangers. I loved that game seven between the Capitals and the Islanders. Like, the entire game, you saw the Capitals dominate puck possession. They had the majority of the scoring opportunities. I don't think the Islanders had more than, like, a dozen shots. And yet, it was so intense near the end that it was 2-1, and you just felt like somehow the Caps were going to let in a bad one. As great as Holtby's been throughout this playoff series, I mean, in that series, he had a .943 save percentage, but the one goal he let in was a little iffy, and just every time the Islanders got a shot, it felt like he might blow it. But now we see the Caps face a team, the Rangers, that seem to easily handle the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round. Chris, what are your thoughts on this series and how the Caps are going to reel after coming off a very emotional seven-game series?
Well, it's a mix of two different teams. They're both differently structured. I mean, New York Rangers are probably one of the best defensive teams out there, and they have options to score. When you go with the Washington Capitals, it's much more of grit and grind hockey, which they used to not be. So it's kind of opposite types of playing the game, which I think will mesh well in this series. I really can't see Washington going far against these guys. And I know a lot of people are thinking, oh, Washington, I think they can get past the Rangers. The Rangers are probably the best team in the NHL some nights. I mean, they have moments of, just, like, I watched them this year, and I just thought, like, man, I just wish they can get out. Because if Montreal goes far enough, let's say they beat Tampa, they're going to have a hell of a time playing New York. That is such a good team. Depth everywhere. I mean, it looks like Zuccarello is out for this series. He may be out for the whole playoffs. But it doesn't even look, you look at that lineup now, it still doesn't look like there's a huge gap because a top six guy left that team. The depth is just great on that team. And that's what shows that this team can go for a long run with a guy like Zuccarello out, and it still looks like a solid team. So I still like what New York has, and I hope Washington can beat them. But I can't see it. I think New York's depth on defense is just going to be able to grind the Washington Capitals forwards out. And if Ovechkin thought he had trouble with Johnny Boychuk, wait until he has Ryan McDonough and Dan Girardi on him.
It's an excellent point. And right now, joining us on the line is a man who has done work with the Ottawa 67s, the San Jose Sharks, the Hockey News, Hockey Prospectus. And now he's on the Hockey Guys podcast. Matty Pfeiffer. Matty, how you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Now, over the course of this interview, we'll be asking you some questions about the playoffs, some of your thoughts on the first round, your predictions for the second round. But what I want to start with, I find your career in the hockey industry is quite fascinating. You played AA hockey growing up. At what stage did you think maybe professional hockey, maybe playing isn't an option, but still working within the game was something that you could see yourself doing?
Yeah. I don't know if it was sort of as fluid as that. I mean, I played hockey growing up, but I think it was pretty clear from pretty young age that I wasn't going to sort of take it to the next level. My sort of interest in hockey as, I don't know what to call this, but a sort of front office sort of capacity really started to fester when I sort of adopted an enthusiasm for analytics and thinking about the game in economic terms. So that's a wider reaching thing than just analytics, but certainly analytics does play a big role in that. But that sort of started, I would say, towards my first year of university, when I sort of started reading the online baseball community, checking out what was going on with hockey. There was a pretty good gap between when I sort of finished playing competitively and take this pretty seriously.
Hey, Matt, Chris here. So you're talking about how you loved a management role and that's what you wanted to do from a young age. I as well have that dream. But it looks like now that if you want to make the NHL and you want to be in a managerial spot position or even get to be a scouting, you have to accept analytics, and that's what we're really seeing with teams. Do you think that will just happen even more and, like, teams will take that pursuit of analytics as the way to go? Or do you think it may die down?
No, it's not going to die down. But we will see some significant changes. I think one thing that we always have to remember is that analytics are simply a sort of a categorized way of expressing some information about the game. And there's a lot of advantages to scouting because analytics, you can sort of use objective analysis, and that means that you can do operations by comparing players easily, and you don't have some sort of subjective bias that often comes with scouting. That doesn't mean, though, my point is that doesn't mean that scouting is going to disappear. But I think what you're going to see is teams not thinking in terms of analytics and scouting, but really consolidating how they think about hockey and bringing these two sort of different ways of thinking about hockey closer together. Because ultimately, it's not so much about the analytics or it's not so much about the scouting, but what it really is about is having as much information as possible when you have to make decisions. This is an information game. It's like being at the blackjack table. The more you know about the deck, the better a decision you'll make. So figuring out a way to synthesize all of this different information is going to be the next big challenge for NHL teams.
Matty, the one thing that's always baffled me about this what seems like a gradual evolution of analytics, especially which is geared up in the last year or two, I've never understood the idea of the old boys club or the old timers club in hockey, where it's that old generation that's, it just seems so against the idea of change or the idea of utilizing data or using numbers. Why do you think there is such a resistance from towards analytics from the old boys club?
It's complicated. I think part of it is that when you're dealing with situations of the sort of magnitude that hockey front offices have to make, you are going to tend to be more conservative in those decisions, often to the detriment of new ways of thinking about it. But certainly, these are, almost every hockey decision is in the order of millions of dollars. So to put your sort of eggs in something that has a wide and long tradition of being used when making those decisions, I think is pretty rational. I think, though, that hockey teams do have a tendency to not make these sort of calculative decisions when they need to. I'll give you an example of what I mean. Oftentimes, there's a lot of voices in any given front office and a lot of really smart guys, and there's sort of a need to have the appearance that everybody's getting their voice in and that everybody's sort of contributing to a decision. There's nothing wrong with that because everybody inside of hockey is brilliant. But what really makes for better decision making is to sort of approach every decision as an isolated calculation, and you have to figure the odds of what this decision may do for your team against what your team might do if you didn't make that decision or made the opposite of that decision. So I guess what I'm saying is when you talk about the old boys club, I mean, I would hesitate to use that word, but certainly I do have an idea of what you're talking about. And I would say using sort of a more objective way of thinking about the future is prerogative to making better decisions.
Well, and I also agree. I think the NHL as a whole and sports as a whole is changing dramatically. I mean, in the last 20 years, sports have changed dramatically. The way sports have played are changing, the speed, the pace. So I totally understand. And it just seems like technology is just making the games even better. I mean, every year we're getting new analytics. NHL is starting to accept it. And it's finally turning into something that will be in the next decade of hockey. It'll be there, and it'll be there to stay. So my question for you now is, the teams like the LA Kings, the Chicago Blackhawks, the teams that are great analytics, you know, they have great possession numbers, and they're going to be, even though the LA Kings didn't make the playoffs this year, they're still going to be good for the next couple years to come. But then you have the teams like the Montreal Canadiens. They have an amazing goaltender, but when you look at their possession stats and everything else, it just, they don't look like a good team. Same with the Calgary Flames. If the thought is that you're always going to get a team like that in the playoffs that'll come in there and they'll ride a hot streak, and then maybe next year they'll totally die off like a Colorado Avalanche? Or is it more of, if you are following those stats and you, if your team's consistently well, you'll be that consistent throughout the years?
Yeah, well, there's what can be explained through the current stats that we have. So that's sort of our ability to make predictions about what teams are going to do. And obviously those predictions have limits. Now, they could have limits in two different ways. There's just sort of random variation, which means you see these in teams like the Colorado Avalanche. Obviously, were successful for a short amount of time, but it was clear that that success was not based on a true talent level. But it should always be noted that there is another sort of randomness in our ability to make predictions, and that's simply that those predictions have limits in what we can in what we detect in a hockey team. So there may be skills, or there may be something that these teams are doing that simply can't be detected. And when we make our predictions, they'll simply just be labeled as randomness or sort of, you know, small sample size variation. But it's very hard to parse those two things out, and we don't always know which one is which. I wouldn't want to make any sort of predictions about individual teams. We'll say is that we know about Corsi, we know about Fenwick, and it provides us, I think, with an interesting framework to sort of look at the teams when we watch them and to sort of figure out if they are succeeding and they don't have a good Corsi, why could that possibly be, or how could this be happening? And if your answer is it's lucky bounces, or it's you know, favorable shooting percentages that are likely to regress, well, that's one thing. But there may also be a lot of potential insights in the way these teams play hockey, and they may be doing something that the current statistics aren't picking up. That's sort of what scouting should be, and that's sort of how we should think about the game.
I think I fell in love with that last answer. I think you hit the nail on the head with every single point you made. Matty Pfeiffer on the Hockey Guys podcast. I'm Hunter Crowther with Chris Shannon. Matty, I got to ask you, because I'm sure you watch hours and hours and hours of game tape. I'm sure you watch a lot of games, and you've created this, your own sort of evaluation of a hockey player. I'm curious, as someone who obviously has a deep history in analytics, but also watches the game, and that's always been a myth with people who say, oh, you don't watch the game, you just look at the numbers. Well, you got to watch the game sometimes several times to keep the numbers. But I guess my question is, what type of things do you look for in a hockey player? When you hear the cliche, like, we're looking for heart and grit and toughness, for you personally, what's something that, when you see it, it stands out for someone when you're trying to evaluate talent?
Yeah, the place I start with is traditional statistics, because although NHL teams do scout and they do put a lot of emphasis on their scouting, at the end of the day, most decisions in the NHL are based on goals, assists, points, time on ice, and plus minus. Teams do not show a ton of variation in, or let's say, a ton of confidence in their own scouting ability when it's time to put money on the line in free agency or in drafting or in any other important decision. So clearly the baseline that I think is most useful is the traditional statistics. So that's goals, assists, and points, particularly for forwards. What I try to find from there is how exactly is a hockey player going to contribute without excelling in scoring those goals, assists, and points? Because if he contributes by scoring goals or getting a lot of assists, then he's simply probably going to be evaluated rather fairly or overrated. So I try to find the guys who might be able to succeed by other means, or, you know, try to find the guys who have some variation in their performance in other areas of play. I know that when you consider, say, a forward in the NHL, we do have a pretty good grip on his offensive performance, that is to say, in the offensive zone, but we have almost no way of measuring his defensive ability in his own zone, besides the sort of crappy statistics like plus-minus. So, you have to sort of find your baseline, find what the market thinks, and find out how the market thinks, and then what I try to do from there is to try to figure out where the flaws or inefficiencies can be with that sort of process of evaluation.
So, Matty, you know the playoffs are going on, and everyone's into that right now. What's the number one team that you think will go the farthest? You can look at the numbers. With your opinion, what team has the team to go the farthest, and even if they have to face injuries, which probably will happen between now and the end?
Yeah, well, it's funny that you phrased it that way. What I found modeling my predictions is that there is a big difference between how good a team is and what their chances are of going on the farthest. Let me give you an example here. If you're a team who's 10% better than everybody else, but you're playing an opponent in the second round who is 10% better than the average playoff team, that's completely negated your advantage by being a good team. So very important to think about that kind of stuff. I would say that the team with the best of winning is Anaheim. They're sort of out in front quite a ways by at least 4 or 5% based on my models. And then the other team that's up there, if you want a sleeper pick, would be Minnesota, who I thought played very well in the first round. I know a lot of talk was about the other team and how they maybe capitulated or aren't a playoff team or need to do something to succeed in the playoffs. But I think that was wholly unfair to Minnesota because I thought they played a heck of a series. I think that they've been progressing really well throughout the season. I have a lot of confidence in that. The problem with predicting an Eastern Conference team is that all the series matchups are fairly even, which means that, or let's say more even than in the West, which means that you're going to get a sort of, even if you're a very good team in the East, winning twice with something like a 50% odds is only going to get you so far, no matter how good your true talent is. Could I just say one thing about Minnesota? One thing that I think statistical analysts have a problem with is that they often look at their statistics through tables or looking at a particular statistic because any statistic has a date range, right? Like it has a start point and an end point. And those start points and end points are rather arbitrary. I mean, let's look at statistics for the current regular season. You know and I know, and we can talk about it, that the second half performance of a team is more important than the first half performance of that team. In fact, the last quarter performance of that team is much more important than the first quarter performance of that team. And that's sort of accepted, but it's never really contextualized inside of the statistics. We sort of just note it and move along, or sometimes we don't even note it. But it's obvious to anybody who sort of has an understanding of statistics or of hockey, that the more recent performances should be weighted heavier. And that would be something that I would caution statistical analysts. Now, on the other side, I would also say that most people in hockey, in fact, go the other way and don't take in enough sample size or a long enough stretch of time to make their evaluation. So there's obviously some nuance between the two. But, yeah.
Maddie, we got about 5 minutes left, so this will be my last question, and then Chris will ask his. I guess I'll ask a two-parter. My first one is the Calgary Flames seem to benefit. I said this before the show. The Flames seem to benefit from their first-round matchup against Vancouver. They played a team that was very top-heavy and heavily relied on the Sedins. And if they could shut down the other three lines, then they were fine, and that proved to be right. Now they're facing an Anaheim Ducks team, which has a whole different meaning to Sedin brothers and Getzlaff and Perry. They have a seems like a more physical lineup, and they've been a very good team. What are some of the things that the Calgary Flames will need to do if they want to succeed and move on to the third round? And then I know it's a loaded question. My second one, as we try to squeeze in time, a lot's been made about the St. Louis Blues losing in the first round. A lot of people are calling for Ken Hitchcock's head. But everything that I've read into suggests that he is a good hockey coach, and he's just struggled with the fact that he's faced really good teams in the first round. Is Ken Hitchcock as good a coach as we should be led to believe, or is he one of the factors in St. Louis not being able to move on? And I'm also sorry for the very loaded, heavy question.
No problem. Ken Hitchcock has a tremendous reputation inside of the league. He really, I know many players who speak very highly of him. I think he's a tremendous coach, and I certainly don't think he could be the, or he should be unduly noted as the person not able to push them into the playoffs. I remember being an Ottawa Senators fan in my youth and remembering this argument about Jacques Martin. We're talking about such insignificant sample sizes, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 games, that to draw anything significant would probably be wrong. The St. Louis Blues, I think, have shown a lot of progress from year to year and from game to game, even during the season. I don't think there's much to worry about at all. That's the kind of thing that's going to happen to teams. It's best to just focus on raising the true talent level of your team as much as possible and not trying to make two grand decisions based on the playoffs. As for Calgary, yeah, I mean, it's very hard to say what Calgary can do against Anaheim. This is a team that isn't going to get pushed around on the third and fourth line. It's a team that is excellent at making lineup matches, even away from home, where they are very smart with their usage, a very disciplined team when it comes to switching lines and getting the matchups that they want. That's something that they took a lot of advantage of, Calgary, in the first round, being able to get the right personnel at the right time. I don't see that happening in Anaheim. I would say Calgary's best hope is to do what they do, hope for poor goaltending, and try to get those high-quality shots from areas and play off the break. It's something that can work against Anaheim, but it is going to take luck. They're not the stronger team.
Got to cut you off, Chris, right before we got less than a minute left. So, Maddie, we do appreciate you coming on the show today. Hope to have you on the show again sometime over the summer, and thanks again for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, you guys. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, take it easy, man. That is Maddie Pfeiffer, who is the head of analytics for the Ottawa 67s. He's done some work around the game. We appreciate him coming on the show. I wish we could talk a little bit more, if only we had a longer show, but that's in another universe. Chris, 30 seconds left. We got Caps Rags tonight, Ducks Flames, and then tomorrow, Lightning, Habs, Wild, Blackhawks. Quick, your picks.
Eric Rangers are going to win. Calgary is going to get the lead on the Anaheim Ducks. Montreal will beat Tampa. And I'll go Chicago.
I have the exact opposite of all of your picks. This was the Hockey Guys podcast. I'm Hunter Crowther. He's Chris Shannon. Go to thehockeyguys.net. See you on Monday.